Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
Yes, you're singing Cowboy John Cass from the Chicago Tribune, with Jeff Carlin from WGN. We're here. We're ready to do the Chicago way, but first, I need some help. I need a safe space from all things Cub. Because it's not the Cubs themselves. Good ball club, great, win the World Series last year, came 3-1 down in the series, came back. You know, I was waiting for the lights in the stadium lights to explode as they won the game, just like movies. But here's the thing. That was last year. And this year, I just don't think I can take it. I went last year. I went to the games. I gave to the office. I gave at the office. I wrote my Cubs stuff. Happy Cubs. Happy City. Congratulations. Break the curse. Blah, 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 blah. But now, this is what it is. Cubs, 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 Cubs. And I really don't mind the true fans like my brothers, Pete and Nick, although they just kicked me off our text, you know, like we have a text group. They kicked me off last night, or the other night when the Cubs won the, I just said, they're going to win the World Series, and then they just basically kicked me off. They went to their own text chat room without me, my brothers. You know, like when we were little and they would run to their bedroom, and if I'd want to come in and talk to them, they'd scream, Mom, Dad, John's here. He's bothering us. Another thing I need the space for, and that is the stupid, insipid, like happy talk, chatter, crappy shit. Sorry, take the shit out. On broadcast, where people who wouldn't know the difference between the infield fly rule and the bat hitting the catcher's glove, stop the plague, make a strike rule, which I guess the umpires didn't know, which is why the Cubs are in the damn thing in the first place. All these people are going to chatter, 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 Cubs, 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 and we're going to have more stories in the paper about some, you know, the good Catholic lady who gave the Cubs jersey to the Pope, and then we're going to have to hear her story again, and it'll be Cubs pizza, Cubs-themed steaks, Cubs... What? Pick it, Jeff Carlin. I need a safe space.
You know, there's a safe space on the south side you can go to where they let dogs in the stadium, and you can barbecue outside and enjoy America's pastime as it was meant to be. You know, a bunch of guys hanging out, enjoying what they do, maybe not doing it very well.
Watching men in shorts kick a ball.
Right.
And that's another thing. With all this stuff about the Cubs, 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 anybody notice that the United States just got kicked out, Jeff Carlin, of the World Cup?
To be fair, World Cup, the men's side of it, because the women, I think, still have a fighting chance.
Do they count?
Oh, come on.
Wait a minute. I love them. They're great.
Athletes are athletes.
No, they're great athletes, but the problem with the – let's just be honest about it. I'm glad they win. I've written about them. I want to write about them some more, but – say, like, the Italian women,
mm-hmm.
They're not into the whole soccer jock thing. They don't want to sweat, right?
Okay.
They want to wear, like, silk suits and be at the cafe. And, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They're not into that whole sweating athletic thing, Right.
So you're saying the U.S. has an unfair advantage in that regard.
Because we have more women who like to sweat
right.
and build muscles.
Right. We have
I think it's a cultural
yeah.
thing. And it's and now that in the future, now that women like South America and other countries where women are now becoming more athletic, and that's good. It's a good thing, but it'll mean more competition for the American women as well in all our sports. So that's good. Fine, that's good. I hope they win. I want them to win.
I'm just saying that the U.S. still has a fighting chance in a World Cup. I mean, it's not for a few years, but...
But you know what?
I know.
Come on, man.
I'm just trying
man.
To distract you from the
Don't play gender on me. Don't play that gender card. This is me, man. Castle.
I'm
impervious.
Don't want to think about it. I know. Since 1986, that was the last time. Remember, and you know what? We just had our Norwegian friend in here telling us, making him feel bad about his soccer team never winning and making it into the World Cup, and then we don't make it.
We were trying to buoy him up.
Yeah.
And look at now, our soccer team, our United States men's national team, it's like a wasteland. It's like Dune, you know, like the bad Dune, the movie with the big spice worms that come and eat you. Like that. It's like a bare, parched landscape. And you know what? Why is this? I'll tell you why. Pay-to-play soccer. Sunil Gulati, your offices are here, sir. You're the head of the United States Soccer Federation. Get with the program or get out. Let's start having more criticism of United States soccer. Let's not have it like... Oh, they're playing hard. They're trying to play hard. If you kick an own goal in a game like Gonzalez did, there should have been headlines. There should have been newspaper stories. You traitor, get out of our country, you scum traitor. Like all the other civilized nations
right.
would do. You know? Death to you, not death.
Well, yeah.
But I mean spiritual.
There are definitely
a spiritual death to you.
Right? Metaphorically speaking.
Metaphorically. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, and Jozy Altidore, you don't run after
gosh.
A ball, you lazy. And you know, Bob Bradley? I mean, Bradley. I'm confusing father and son. Get out, all of you. I don't want to see it. I want to see Pulisic. I want to see Yedlin. Maybe one or two others. And the others, go. It's sickening.
I know. It's embarrassing. It's really bad. I saw that pop up on my feed of news. I was like, oh, my gosh, really? Of course, like you said, it didn't reach to the other upper reaches of mainstream media because there was just so much else going on.
Oh, because it's all Cubs, 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 Cubs. But you know what? Everybody, not everybody is a Cubs fan. Even in this city. It's half and half, right?
Aye, sure.
What?
Let's say half and half.
You know what? You're mocking me again.
No, I would never mock Casso.
Yes, you are. You're mocking
I think they're
me.
More Cubs fans.
When you use the Casso as if it's a stick figure that you can mock, you're mocking me, sir.
I'd love a Casso stick figure game. That'd be fun. A cowboy themed.
Yeah, with that Gene Autry head
yeah,
on, and that smirky face.
Yeah, you could be a part where you ride a bear. That'd be fun.
I remember, I think WGN Morning News put it on once when it first came out. We should have that guy on who made it, Squire Hogg.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's brilliant.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what are we going to do about, men's soccer, forget it. Tony Preckwinkle, forget you.
Seriously.
Tex Winkle, you're done.
Yeah, jeez.
Bruce Rauner, we already did that
last week.
You're toast.
Yeah, he's gone.
Harvey Weinstein.
Oh, God, I know. Steen.
Okay. Harvey Steen. Sorry, Harvey Weinstein. Okay. What the bleep were you thinking?
And not him. I mean, I'm going to just write him off as a bad soul and say that I'm not surprised. It's who he is. He's a bad person. Not what you were thinking. He's thinking what he was thinking because he's a bad person. He's dark inside. The people who are around him, the people who are aware of this, that are making jokes for a decade about this,
yeah,
Those are the people that bother me. I would never, you know, I've had people come to me in my business who've said, hey, you know, so-and-so said something to me, and or they did something to me, or they were inappropriate in one way or another. And I tell them, you go to your boss. I mean, you go to HR, you go to somebody that nobody should have to deal with it. Nobody should feel, you know, awkward because someone else is doing something in their workplace.
And now you have a fed old man doing it because fed old men have always done it. And for some weird reason, fed old men with a lot of money and power think that they're sexually attractive. Right. How does that work?
Power.
You moron.
Yeah.
It's about power. And so, you know what? There's one good thing that might come of it. We'll have more women harassers as women get power, gay harassers as more gays get power. All the different groups will have their chance at harassment of others, but it's not about your identity.
Right.
It's not, one professor got all upset with me. My column ran in the Madison State Journal, the Wisconsin State Journal, and he was saying something like, Harvey Weinstein is a liberal Jewish guy, and that means that all the conservatives are pounding on him. That's not the case. Is your religion or ethnicity is not the issue. It's your humanity that's the issue. And human beings, you know what they do when they have power? They use it.
Mm-hmm.
The little bureaucrat at the DMZ.
DMV?
DMV. Who wants to play mind games with you, will do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
The librarian, the bus driver, will just keep the bus stopped until stop eating chicken or whatever you wanted to do on the bus. You know, because people do.
But you shouldn't be eating chicken on the bus.
You shouldn't. You shouldn't do a lot of things on the bus that people do. But whatever they want to do, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So we have that cliche. There's nothing more, you know, infuriating than a bureaucrat with a small amount of power. But there's nothing more frightening,
dangerous
than a man, a powerful individual with a lot of power.
Mm-hmm.
And with journalists either on the payroll or currying favor so they can make fortunes in movies. And all this is human nature. And that's why our founders warned us about this. That's why we don't like bosses. You know, some people like bosses, like political bosses. I don't. I like checks and balances. So does Jeff Cartlin.
Yep.
And we're going to talk to, in a few minutes, we're going to talk to
the boss of Real Clear Politics.
The boss of Real Clear Politics, who could set us straight on all this stuff and put it into some context. And that's Tom Bevin of Real Clear Politics. Chicago's very own Tom Bevin, founder and publisher of Real Clear Politics. Good morning, Mr. Bevin.
Brother Cass, how are you?
How are you? So, I do want to ask you about the Cubs because I need a refuge, some safe space from them. But in the meantime, but first I want to say, I just can't take, I won't be able to take it. It's like living in North Korea during a funeral during an official happy time and everybody has to clap like chipmunks. It's making me sick. In the meantime, though, what is going on with
this? Are you saying you don't like the Cubs? You don't cheer for the Cubs?
Look, I did last year. I mean, I kind of did. I gave it the office. I went to the games. I wrote columns. Oh, I'm so happy you came back from down 3-1. I quoted my little brothers. Oh, can the Cubs win? Please win, Cubs, and all that. This year, I gave it the office, okay?
John, I just think you should I think you should consume the Cubs then in a different way. Not like Hemlock. Just through the political lens. Just know that, you know, all of the blue checkmark elites in Washington are crying in their Cheerios this morning because the Cubs took them down. And maybe next week all of the libertines out in Hollywood who are rooting for the Dodgers will be feeling the same way. So you know, that'll buoy your spirits if you think about it that way.
Spoken like a true editor, cutting right to the cultural zeitgeist of something. That's good. May I quote you on that?
Sure, okay. Absolutely.
I sent a note in before we taped this to my editor saying, I need a safe space from the Cubs. And they said, and I got a reply from one that said, okay, do you have an idea or are you looking for an idea for Sunday? And I'm like, I just texted back, that was the idea, damn it. But see, that's how they are. Institutionally, they can't even think outside their own bubble. And find me a segue from that to Harvey Weinstein, where it looks like we not only have a cliche made flesh once again, the king of the casting couch, but there's something else going on here, too, about journalism and the connection between journalism and journals who want to write screenplays. What is going on with this thing?
Well, you're right. This is it's a major scandal, and there are a lot of facets to it. Obviously, you know, culturally, politically, there's the media angle. I mean, let's just start with the obvious that this guy was the open secret. I mean, everybody knew what was going on. They may not have known the magnitude or the scope, but they certainly knew this guy was a pig and a predator and was regularly, you know, having assistants and whatnot funnel him young, attractive women who were looking to sort of make it big. And he was the big Hollywood executive that wielded all of this power over them and used it in the most sort of, you know, humbling, evil way. And even if you set aside the sexual harassment piece of it, this just wasn't a good guy. I mean, everybody talked about what an awful, awful person he was. And I read a quote somewhere that was really telling that said, you know, power and fame only makes you more of who you are. It doesn't change you. It just makes you more of who you are. And this guy was not a good person to begin with. And power and fame obviously made him that much more of a monster. But he existed right in the midst of the Hollywood elite and all these folks who, again, lecture the, you know, the flyover country about, you know, how they need to live their lives, and that they, you know, how they are inferior if they're not embracing progressive values and whatnot. I mean, the sanctimony now is just an hypocrisy is so rich and deep. And again, this is not, I mean, you have Roger Ailes, this is sexual harassment and sexual predation knows no political boundaries, no ideology. But this one in particular, given the way Hollywood has been so, you know, we're so quick to jump on Donald Trump and Roger Ailes and Bill O'Reilly for, you know, perhaps rightly, but you know, to then go around and dismiss and wave away what was sort of, you know, clear as day now in retrospect, is something it's a stain that's not going away. And there's already a rift in this country between the elites and the hoi polloi, if you will, and this is only going to exacerbate that further.
Well, since I'm in hoi polloi central, right, Chicago, along with you, and I read with interest the stuff on Real Clear Politics, where and others, where they're just so amused by, you know, why they think it's whataboutism. Actually, the left ruled whataboutism to be illegal, and now they're suffering from repressed whataboutism. They want to use whataboutism, but they can't because they've already outlawed it. And the result is obviously skin conditions, bad boils and so forth, on many professors that have read my stuff in Madison, Wisconsin recently. But the larger question to me is that, number one, we had icons, or let's say celebrity-type icons, ripping on Republicans for this behavior, while they knew and had either been confronted by or knew personally about Weinstein's behavior and his relationship to the Democratic Party, and they kept their mouths shut while other women got were also assaulted. So that's the one. The second thing, I think, is to something you and I have talked about before with Jeff Carlin, and I'd like to ask you again, which is, where were the journalists?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, that's one of the most explosive angles of this is that NBC News, apparently, you know, Ronan Farrow, who authored the New Yorker piece, had it and was working on it for NBC News, took it to NBC News, apparently with plenty of corroborating material, including the audio tape where Weinstein, you know, that he got from the New York Police Department, where Weinstein sort of admits that he had fondled this woman's breasts the day before and was telling her just to get in the room, along with other women who he had interviewed, and NBC basically pulled the plug, and we still don't have good answers for that. I mean, the president of NBC News came out with a statement and tried to sort of, you know, wash this thing away, but I don't think that it's going to go away because it's contradicted by plenty of evidence to the contrary. And so that story, again, the media credibility on this, media's credibility in general is in the tank already. This is going to drive it further in the tank. And you do have plenty of instances where people have been doing features on Harvey Weinstein and, you know, good reporters, David Carr from the New York Times, he passed away a few years ago, but had done something. Ken Auletta in the New Yorker had done a big profile, and they heard the rumors about Harvey Weinstein because they weren't secrets, but they couldn't get anybody in Hollywood in the industry to go on record to give them the sort of proof that they needed to put this stuff in print. And
let me give you a scenario. Scenario is I'm a journalist who is underpaid, as all print journalists are. We have the same bills that everybody else does. We have kids we want to send to school. And somebody says, well, what about a screenplay? And you write a screenplay a story is optioned to Harvey Weinstein. Then what?
There were examples of that. I don't think he was doing that with everybody, but he certainly, that was one of the tools in his toolbox to keep this thing under wraps. He would co-opt some of these people, especially the people who covered the, you know, Hollywood industry and some of the gossip rags, you know, that he would do that and co-opt them with promises of, you know, fame and power and whatnot. And that was one of the ways that he was managed to sort of keep a lid on this thing. And the other part was he would threaten to destroy careers. He would sick people, you know, legal. He had a battery of lawyers that he could sick on anybody who. And obviously, we now know he paid them off. I mean, he paid off, you know, I think 8+ women now with deals and made them sign non-disclosure agreements. And that's something that, you know, we saw with Bill O'Reilly, that's something that another tool that's used by these powerful people to keep folks in exchange for cash. And, I mean, you know, if you're a victim of one of these things, it's puts you in an interesting spot where you're asked to, you know, settle. So look, there are a lot of different ways that he was able to go about this, but first and foremost, he was protected by members of his industry who did not. Again, you look at like Ben Affleck, who apparently was told by Rose McGowan about her incident with Harvey Weinstein. You know, Brad Pitt, who knew about Weinstein's harassment of Gwyneth Paltrow when he was dating. So these guys knew, and they knew long ago, and they continued to not say anything. They continued to do movies with him and participate in the industry, and so, you know, work with him. And
how did Hillary not know?
It's all that wrapped together.
How did Hillary not know? How did Barack not know? How did Nancy Pelosi and all these people, Schumer, all these people that travel in the same circles, right? They see the same jokes. The jokes were on the Oscars. I forgot who it was. Well, who
Seth
was
McFarlane
it?
And the, Seth yeah, McFarlane, the right? And even before that, you have years ago on 30 Rock, and you have other stand-ups who were doing jokes about him, knowing the industry. So it was all there. People just didn't talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, the political angle, too, is for Clinton, who obviously they are wired into Hollywood. They know all these people. I'm sure they've heard the stories as well. Obama's every, you know, but the political angle is, look, if they're travelers in the same ideological causes as us, and they're giving us money, we're willing to sort of look the other way. And it's just, you know, rumors, and let's not probe that any further. This was one of the most interesting things. When Harvey Weinstein was first accused of this, he released a statement, and the statement was sort of like, you know, I haven't acted properly toward people, and I'm sorry, and I'm gonna go get rehab. And then the last two paragraphs of his statement were, and by the way, I'm gonna, you know, spend my time going after Donald Trump and the NRA, and you know, it was like this sort of parting shot. Why did he do that? Why would he do that? Why would he put that in there? Because he's playing on these people, on Hollywood and the Democratic Party, his allies, to say basically, like, listen, I'm one of the good guys because I hate Donald Trump and I hate the NRA and I'm on your side. And so, you know, please let me back into polite society after this. Give me a second chance because I'm going to fight for the same political fights that you're fighting for. I'm on your side. And that is part and parcel why the politicians looked the other way for all these years and never really investigated it or gave the money back or you know, associated with him in the first place, because he was on their team.
I don't know all the films that he's done. I would hope that he produced Dangerous Liaison, because at the end of the movie, when that you have this corrupt ruling class, which is what this is really, this is the play, right? Hollywood elites, rich people telling middle class people about virtue and how they lack virtue while they're going on as libertines and hypocrites. And at the end of the movie, if you recall, Glenn Close's character was hissed at by, right, Jeff, by countless people in a theater. Right. And one man goes up to her and says, ooh, ooh. It was just perfect. And I'm thinking that there's a larger story here about cult, that the cultural, it's just like it proves to everybody out here in hoi polloi land where we live that this is who they are. They're phonies. They moralize. They tell us how to live. Well, they don't live that way. They're like politicians. And the sad thing is, and I think politicians of both parties, like that ridiculous fool from Pennsylvania who,
asked his mistress to get, allegedly asked his mistress right. to get an abortion. Right. He's a super pro-life guy. Right.
I mean, it's just the class, the ruling class of all of this seems so corrupt at a time when there is a lot of anger still in the air, that I find this to be, I don't know, like I wish someone like a great novelist like Thackeray or someone could live and write this, you know, because it's deeper than just some fat old guy who's a phony who takes hot girls on the couch, right?
Right. I mean, it is. And again, Democrats will turn and point to Mike Murphy or some of these other, or Tim Murphy, excuse me, or some of these other folks, you know, the senator from Louisiana who was caught in the prostitution, you know, had his number revealed as having, you know, and look, Donald Trump, you know, the tape, they'll say, well, geez, you know, at least we didn't elect Harvey Weinstein president, you know, but Republicans could turn around and say, to all of these Democrats and liberals who say, oh, Donald Trump's destroying the morals of the office. And it's just like, well, did you forget about Bill Clinton and what it went on? You know, I mean, you can keep going back and back and back, round and round on the hypocrisy merry-go-round. And it doesn't really get us anywhere. And there's a lot of whataboutism, as you mentioned. But I think stepping back and looking at it from the broader perspective is, our country is so divided now. There was a Pew report that came out last week showing that ideologically we are now so divided that there is no middle anymore. The partisan gap on a lot of these questions, it's been moving this way for some time. It accelerated under Obama. It's accelerated even further under Trump. And now, I mean, they've got some amazing charts, Sean, where it's like, you know, the median Democrat, you know, is 97% of Republicans are to the right of the median Democrat and vice versa. So there's just no middle ground anymore. And on top of that, since 1994, about 20% of Republicans had very unfavorable views of Democrats and vice versa. So one out of every five person looked at the other, if you were a member of the opposite party, and said, I don't really like you very much. That number's now half. So we don't like each other very much anymore. And we assign, bad motivations. It's no longer I disagree with you politically. It's you're a bad person. You have nefarious motives and all of that. And so we're as divided as we've been at least since the 1960s, and some would argue since the 1860s. And this cultural split that's going on, which it's the Weinstein thing, it's the NFL protests. I mean, it's all this sort of cultural zeitgeist that's out there is demonstrating that as a country, I think we're coming apart at the seams.
Well, that's what happens when the middle becomes corrupt and when it collapses of its own weight. And the middle has been corrupted for years, which is why this is happening. I mean, it wouldn't be happening if you didn't have people trading votes for power and access and all the corruption in the middle of the thing. And it breaks apart, and then there's no gravity to hold the pieces together, so they start flying. Here's another question for Tom Bevin, founder of Real Clear Politics. And I want to take Harvey Weinstein's side on this.
Okay.
I know it's weird, but I have to. And here's why. The one thing that always bothered me about the progression of fantastic stories like this is when you have the whole herd beating up one guy. I always want to, I have to do this for conservatives. I might as well do it for liberal. I have to step back, step away from the herd, and see what's going on. What happened? I mean, here's a man with all this power and all this influence, cultural weight, has New York Times as friends, Hollywood as friends, the Democratic Party, the leaders, even Michelle and Barack Obama sent their daughter to be an intern with him, which I guess would be like if I had a daughter, I would send her to be Bill Clinton's intern. And all this happened. How did this break down all of this? Is there something behind all this that I'm not getting? Where he either his enemies or someone, some group said, release the hounds upon him. It's almost like you could argue in a way, if you were going to put a tinfoil hat on, there's like a deep state like attack where you have everybody demanding his head. Tell me.
Look, that's a good question. Why now? Why, if this guy's been protected by Hollywood and all these forces using all these tricks and tools at his disposal for so long, why now? Why did this happen? It's probably a couple of things. I mean, I do think there is the current environment. First of all, I think Harvey Weinstein is not as powerful as he used to be, not as much of a force, not as much of a dominating force. His company was in some financial distress. And the movie industry in general, I think, is a little bit less dominant than it was. They're not having a good year, that kind of thing. I think social media was part of it too, where you now have people who can put stuff out on social media and it gets picked up and it goes viral and it becomes a sort of a sensational type of thing. You had, in the case of the New York Times, you had this memo that they got their hands on, which sort of corroborated some of this information. That memo, was written, I think, in 2015. So that was something that was new to the equation. So I think it's a combination. And again, you had, Roger Ailes and Bill O'Reilly. You had these big sort of media, powerful media folks who had been laid low by similar accusations. And so I think it was a combination of all those things. But I don't know any more than you, John. I'm just speculating. I mean, it could have been that he's got – I mean, it sounds like he was he ruled Hollywood and, in par with an iron fist, and people didn't like him as much as they were afraid of him. And so he probably had plenty of enemies who were you know, when the chance arose, they were perhaps eager to get the stuff out. I just don't know.
Well, one thing we do know, it's the end of being lectured to by Hollywood. The liberal leverage, the leverage liberals had with Hollywood and making people feel guilty about something, you know, like, oh, I can't wait for another Matt Damon movie in which I feel bad about fracking or something ridiculous. All that crapola is done. It's gone. There's no more. You might as well start making westerns again, I think.
Wouldn't you love that?
Like that Open Range. You ever see that one?
No.
We talked about it last week, and Jeff Carlin, the brilliant fellow that he is, found a line from Open Range and put it on. It's a great movie. Annette Bening, Robert Duvall, and the guy with the fish gills.
Wouldn't it
Kevin
be nice?
Costner. Yeah.
Yeah, wouldn't it be nice if Hollywood just went back to making movies and entertaining us and not lecturing us, and the NFL just went back to playing football, which is, you know, and not trying to like use the national anthem as a it would be nice if we could depoliticize some of this stuff and take the cultural lightning out of it. Because it seems to have infected all of this stuff and it's gotten worse and worse, and it would be nice because we got plenty of other stuff to be outraged about day in and day out these days with all that's going on. It'd be nice to be able to just go to a movie and watch a movie and go to a ball game and watch a ball game.
Wish it were so, but the larger and more influential the federal government became, the more it moved into every facet of our lives. You have that part, then you have the reaction to it, and then you have the collapse of the corrupt middle. And the result is inevitable, and I think there were several books written about this, usually like with a title like The Fall of the Roman Empire. And I just see it, and I don't want to be like, you know, the sky is falling, man, but I just see the middle collapsing, and everything you said that was reflected in the, I think it's Pew Research that you referenced, all that is just going to increase until maybe we're attacked by... If we can only have the Chinese invade us for like 6 weeks and then promise to leave, you know what I mean? So we could remember what it's like to be free.
I bet the Canadians, they would seem like it might be an easier bargain if they invade us. I agree. And someone wrote an article recently about, you know, the music industry, for example, you know, and all these people that we're listening to and revering, you know, the Rolling Stones. And I mean, I'm sure there will be plenty of other shoes to drop. There are plenty of other men who have acted inappropriately and been harassers and predators who've used their positions of power in the music industry, in the television industry. I mean, you name it, publishing industry, maybe even in journalism, John, we don't know.
Wait a minute. Journalists are not, I'm, you know, print journalists. I don't know about the TV boys with their haircuts and all that. And they're good teeth. Print journalists are
archangels.
We're archangels, right? I'll tell you one thing though, and it's a good idea because I'm going to use. Good to have Tom on because I'm going to use that pithy little quote about the Cubs for a Sunday piece. But also, Tom, just so you know, for all the corruption you just referenced and all the miasma of corruption in Chicago. Our corruption is pretty, I would almost say missionary. I mean, it is only about the money. We never have sex. I think we had one sex scandal. I'm accepting Jesse Jackson and Junior and his wife, who want to have co-respondents from everywhere in their divorce. But George Dunn, I think, had
Mel Reynolds.
Yeah, Mel Reynolds. Well,
Mel Reynolds, okay, I hit the lottery, the high school girl, right? That's what he said.
He did.
Oh, my God. And George Dunn with the, he had women cutting his grass or something. I can't even make a metaphor on the fly that would be safe. But whatever it was, those are the only two I can think of. It's all about the money here,
well,
baby.
It's not about the baby. I suppose it's hard to do anything else when you got both hands in the cookie jar, you know, grabbing at the cash. So, I mean, I suppose, but How about, not to change gears on you, John, but I had this vision of you doing an end zone dance when the soda tax was repealed.
I did. I did the end zone dance before it happened. Actually, yeah. I wrote it on a Tuesday, and it happened Wednesday. Then I just retweeted it with sort of a tweet that indicated that it, like I knew it would happen or something.
Is this the beginning of a reformation of the Cook County and Illinois state government?
I'm pretty sure it's one of the only times a tax has been rolled back or like repealed entirely. I mean, taxes are just getting added usually here. It's not the other way.
The coalition between angry sugar-obsessed suburbanites and angry sugar-obsessed minorities in the city is like a powerful one.
Well, hold on a second. I was an angry...
You're rather
Diet Coke. Yeah. What? No, I was.
You're true.
You know, I'm paying the same tax for my Diet Coke that everybody else is. So it wasn't just sugar obsessed.
There's another thing we don't like in Chicago. You know what that is? Some Budinsky. A Budinsky from New York with a lot of money is going to tell me what I'm going to drink. Are you kidding? Mayor Bloomberg?
We don't like driving to Wisconsin and Indiana to get our soda. That's what we don't like.
Exactly.
So,
Tom Bevin, you just made my day, man. You helped me with one, and you gave me the other column idea for next week about how, like, hey, there's no, what's our corruption? It's not sex. It's just the money. Thanks a lot, man.
The money. All right, you got it.
Thanks, buddy. Bye.
Yep.
It was great to have Tom Bevin on because I love having editors on who can help me, you know, planned columns, so that was good. And so read his site at realclearpolitics.com. It is just awesome. And it's even awesomer when he actually puts my columns on his site. And for Jeff Carlin, Tom Bevin, John Cass, looking for the safe space from cubbishness. Help me out here, man. Please let me find the safe space. It's been another edition of the Chicago Way. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening. And we hope you'll come back next week.